The Terrifying Lies Podcast, with music and stories by Craig Nybo. Greetings, friends, and welcome to this interseason episode of the Terrifying Lies Podcast. I'm Craig Nybo, your host. Currently, I'm working hard on season 4, and believe me, it's going to be a banger. While I toil away in the background, I'd like to turn the airwaves over to the Freestyle Gargoyles. For those of you who don't know about the Gargoyles, it's an experiment I and my friends conduct occasionally. Here's how it works. I and my musician friends invite a few authors into our rehearsal space for an evening. The authors come prepared with a story. As they step up to the microphone to read, the band accompanies them with a fully improvised soundtrack. The results? Chaos, with occasional moments of brilliance. Lately, we've been inviting a small audience in for the festivities. Today, I present a new inductee into the menace of Gargoyles, an author named J.C. Chambers III, who has recently become a good friend of mine. Here are the participating musicians. Keith Moon, of course, on drums. Me on bass guitar. Rob Griffin on guitar. Aaron Osminski on trombone. Rick Neff on tenor sax. Brandon Tucker on trumpet. Julie Tucker on vocals. We invited a special guest to conduct the proceedings for this one. None other than Sean Hunt, the guy who inspired the Freestyle Gargoyles in the first place. I'll talk more about that on the next episode. It was a great honor to induct him into the menace. With no more delay, I give you J.C. Chambers III and the Freestyle Gargoyles.
It was early morning when I arrived at the Bayside dock. The late autumn air was chilly, and a blanket of fog hung over the gently lapping water. I trotted onto the corrugated metal landing, a fishing pole in one hand, with a camp chair tucked under the arm, and a heavy sloshing bucket in the other. Once I was out near the dock's end, seeing no one else nearby, I unfolded the camp chair, sat in it, and did up my tackle. I don't know what drove me to go fishing that morning. I hadn't been out on the water in years, and my hands were clumsy on the line and hook. After taking longer than I'd care to admit to get my pole and line ready, I turned my attention to the heavy, lidded bucket I'd taken with me. I opened the top and shined a light down on its contents. There, swimming in the bucket water, were a half dozen small fish. Bait fish, the store label had called them. It had said what kind of fish they were, but I couldn't remember if I had a gun to my head. I plunged my hand into the bucket, the water cold on my skin, and I grasped my hand around one writhing, slimy little creature. It wriggled in my hand, but I held it tight as I withdrew it from its cage. I stared into its vacant, uncomprehending eyes for only a moment before I pushed the hook through its nostrils and out its mouth. It struggled against the pain for only a moment before it calmed again. Gently, I lowered it into the water and leaned back in the chair. It took a moment for the fish to gain its bearings, as if the shock of baiting had stupefied it. But after lingering dazedly on the ocean surface, it took off, pulling my line with it. My reel whirred as the fish darted out into the inky black sea. I grinned. See? This wasn't too hard. Releasing my rod with one hand, I reached for a can of beer waiting patiently in my tackle box. The moment my fingers touched the can, however, my rod jerked. I almost let go of my fishing rod in excitement. Grinning stupidly from ear to ear, I cranked on the reel, pulling in my catch. The line was taut like a wire as my prey struggled to escape my clutches. And then, nothing. The line went limp on my pull. I frowned as I pulled the rest of the line in, knowing already that both fish were gone, my bait and my prey. And as the last of the line came up, I realized with dismay that I'd lost a hook with it. A rough, wheezing cackle sounded nearby. I jumped in my seat, head whipping around to see an old man in a fisherman's coat, sitting not 10 feet from my fishing spot. He faced away from me as he did up his tackle, his wiry beard visibly shaking as he laughed. "That right there is a real shame," he said, his voice gnarled and old. "Was that your first time fishing with live bait, son?" I slowly settled into my chair again, trying to get a grip on my nerves. I was certain that I'd been alone out here, and I hadn't heard the man sit down. I feigned nonchalance as I answered with a smile. "You could tell, huh?" The old man barked a laugh as he drew up his line through the rings of his pole. "Don't worry, I won't tell no one. But indulge an old man and let me give you some advice." I swallowed and nodded. "Okay. When you got a fish on the hook, you gotta give it some slack. Let it tire itself out. A few pulls here and there, sure. But you wait until it's exhausted, then you reel it in." I scoffed. Everybody knew that. Still, I thanked the old man for his advice and turned away. "Oh, and one more thing," said the old man. "Uh-huh," I said absently as I reached for my beer. Flick, swish, stab. Sharp, piercing pain flashed straight into my outstretched arm. I stared down in disbelief to see a metal hook sticking right into the skin of my forearm, the line attached to a taut and leading right to the fisherman. I screamed as the hook pulled me from my seat, stretching the skin around the puncture. The fisherman was on his feet and he was laughing. "There's a special type of bait, you see, draws out the best game," he cackled as he yanked me along. I dared not pull back, lest the hook slice straight through my flesh. "They love the stench of fear, the flavor of agony, especially when it comes from somebody so delectably cruel." Now I could see him in full. He was an enormous man with a shaggy beard and matching dangles of hair. His eyes were concealed beneath his mariner's cap, but the smile on his face was impossibly wide, filled with yellowed, crooked teeth. I cried out for help, certain this was the end, that this man was to kill me. And then he disappeared, like smoke blown by a strong wind. One moment he towered over me, howling with laughter, and the next he was gone, along with his line, pole, and hook. I shuddered as I fell back onto the dock, gasping for air. I wiped the fresh tears from my eyes. Had I just imagined all this? I stared down at my arm. Clear as day, I saw the puncture wound in my flesh, a trail of blood leaking down my arm. In my frenzy, I had knocked over the bucket of bait. The small fish writhed and flopped on the unforgiving dock, so close to the safety of water, yet so far. I ignored them as I gathered up my belongings and returned to my car. The sun had crawled over the horizon by the time I got home, its warming rays melting away the fog which hung between the countless pines of coastal Washington. A couple beers and a warm shower later, I'd convinced myself everything was fine, that I'd imagined it. I couldn't have been more wrong. The hookings began the next day at work. I'm a surgeon by trade. One moment I was in the prep room organizing my tools. The next I feel a hook in my shoulder. Same pain, just as agonizing. It yanks me hard, pulling me sidelong into the tray of scalpels and knives. I fall to the floor, terrifying the interns. There's blood. They think I stuck myself on a scalpel, but I know better. When I get a free moment, I check myself in the mirror. Sure enough, there's a puncture mark in my shoulder. From there, the torture continued. At first, it was occasional, maybe once a day. But as the days passed into weeks, the hookings became more frequent. When it happened while I was driving, I started taking the train. When it happened at the movie theater, I stopped going out. When it happened while I slept, I stopped closing my eyes. I found myself in a random bathroom at a random bar. My eyes were sunken, my shirt long lost. Countless puncture wounds marked my body from where the fisherman had hooked me. As I stared into the mirror, I almost didn't recognize the man staring back. In my hand, I flipped open a pocket knife, then clicked it shut. Flipped it open again, clicked it shut. I knew this couldn't go on much longer. Flip, click. Either the fisherman would finally come for me, or I could end it. Deprive him of whatever wretched prize he sought. I lost track of time, gazing at my knife. Flip, click, stab. I'd known it was coming. This time he hooked me on my left thigh. I howled, not with pain this time, no, but with rage. I could see the line pulling at me, and I swung at it with my knife. The line severed and the pain receded. I heard the fisherman's cackling laugh. It resounded through the bathroom, pervading it like a filthy muck. Fog flowed in, obscuring the filthy tile floors. Another hook jabbed into me, just above the wrist. I dropped the knife, then caught it with the other hand and slashed once more. No sooner had I done so than another hook caught me in the heel, another in the chest. More and more, over and over, hook after hook, cut line after cut line. A hook went through my cheek, yanking my head to the side. Another pulled at the flesh of my thumb, jerking my hand back and making me drop my knife. Lines twisted and wove through the air about me, hooks pulling me this way and that, until, at last, I was completely still. Only my breathing could be heard in the dimly lit quiet of the bathroom. Slowly but surely, the hooks coerced me, turned me, forced me to look toward the bathroom door. And as it did so, the bathroom door creaked open. Through the doorway entered a figure impossibly stooped. It wasn't the fisherman, no. It was a tall, lanky, many-armed abomination. It wore a moth-ridden suit. Its face was a nearly blank slate of mottled pale, but for the two orifices where its eyes should have been, in their place were circular mouths filled with teeth and receding deep into the creature's skull. It made no noise but for a soft clicking as it descended upon me. I was paralyzed, unable to even scream. It tilted its head as if considering me before it reached down, two hands, firmly grasped my jaw and crawled into my mouth. It felt like my jaw was being torn off its hinges. My breath stuck in my chest. My head spun and my ribs felt like they were going to crack wide open and reveal all the horridness inside me. Instead, the pain receded and my jaw closed shut. Countless hooks in my skin disappeared and I fell to my knees. The pain left behind was a throbbing ache, but it was nothing like the piercings that had riddled me before. I felt like I had a frog in the back of my throat. Shakily, I looked up in the mirror. My skin was pale as a ghost, but for its innumerable crimson wounds. Terrified of what I'd see, I opened my mouth. At the back of my throat, I saw two mouths, two eyes, staring and consuming. I reached for my knife. I had to end it. As I swung to plunge the blade into my own heart, my jaw widened once more, and a single pale arm stretched out from my mouth, clenching around my wrist. It held me there for a long moment as I struggled in vain to finish the deed. Consigning myself to my fate, I finally released the knife. It clattered to the floor unceremoniously. I expected the fisherman to come barging into the bathroom to collect his prize. He didn't. Moments passed into minutes, minutes to hours. I returned home and slept for the first time in days. The days passed into weeks, and the weeks into months, the months into years. I avoid looking in the mirror. I refuse to visit the dentist. The creature inside me compels me to eat, compels me to drink, compels me to live. But I know, I just know, that one day I will feel the fisherman's hooks once more.
For today's song, I thought I'd give you something completely different. Decades ago, I played in a band called Funk Toast. We had a great time playing gigs in the clubs all over Utah and in neighboring states. Many from Funk Toast play in the Rust Monster band today, the band in which I currently play. Well, Funk Toast eventually broke up, and this greatly saddened me. 2 years later, a good friend of mine approached me with a proposition. She said, "Craig, you play in a band, don't you? Why don't you come play for Kaysville's 4th of July celebration?" I agreed. The only catch? Funk Toast hadn't played together for over 2 years. I concocted a great and terrible plan to get them back together. I called each of them and told them about this gig opportunity. I asked if they would like to get together for old time's sake to play a show. But there would be one catch. We would be playing country music. Now, nothing against country at all, but it just isn't my jam. And it wasn't the jam of any member of the band. But, on a lark, everyone wanted in. We proceeded to learn a set of country songs for the show. We all dudded up in cowboy hats and tight jeans and took to the stage. We had an absolute blast and ended up playing a couple more gigs as the Big Sky Country Boys. As part of the show, I wrote an original country song. One thing led to another, and pretty soon, we had a collection of around 10 originals. I'm going to play you one of those songs. But before I do, you have to understand that we are a funk band, not a country band. In recording and performing country music, I learned to understand that it has nuances that we simply couldn't emulate. But I believe we made a brave attempt. And so, with no more delay, I give you "There Ain't Enough Whiskey" by the Big Sky Country Boys.
Do you remember, darling, the night we met? It was not long ago at the dance hall on the edge of the city line. It was all I could do just to cross the dance floor, just to say hello. I said, my name's Bo and you were Caroline. And there ain't enough whiskey in the morning. There ain't enough whiskey in the afternoon. There ain't enough whiskey in the twilight of the evening to drown the flames that were left by you. We were married on a rainy day back in 1993. I wore a big old smile and a tuxedo too. You were happy then, at least I thought, I thought everyone agreed. I was your big cowboy and you my honeydew. Now there ain't enough whiskey in the morning. There ain't enough whiskey in the afternoon. There ain't enough whiskey in the twilight of the evening to drown the flames, darling, that were left by you. I thought love was strong, I thought it'd be lifelong. I thought love would conquer all. I thought we'd always be together, me and you. But when I found your letter on your pillow, I knew that you were gone. And I knew that love had said, dear Bo, adieu. Now there ain't enough whiskey in the morning. There ain't enough whiskey in the afternoon. There ain't enough whiskey in the twilight of the evening to drown the flames that were left by you. Let me tell you, honey, now there ain't enough whiskey in the morning. There ain't enough whiskey in the afternoon. There ain't enough whiskey in the twilight of the evening to drown the flames that were left by you.
Thank you for joining me on this interseason episode of the Terrifying Lies podcast. I plan on releasing 3 more of these episodes before we descend once again into the pit for season 4. For now, I wish you sweet dreams, or should I say, sweet nightmares.
This has been the Terrifying Lies podcast. Please come again. You're welcome here.